It's 8:06. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Tuesday, May 20th. Currently 39 degrees and mostly sunny here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 41 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. Here's a look at your forecast for your Tuesday for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at lots of sunshine. It's going to be a beautiful day out there. A chilly start with those temperatures down into the 30s, but we'll climb into the upper 50s there in the Park City area this afternoon. We'll be in the mid-60s this afternoon in the Heber Valley. Again, lots of sunshine. Should be a very nice day. As we go into your Wednesday, look for lots of sunshine. We start off with temperatures in the 30s, but we'll see our high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s for in Park City with that sunshine. We'll be seeing those highs climbing into the low 70s there in the Heber Valley. So back to closer to where we should be for this time of the year as we go throughout the middle of the week. But we continue to warm up, though. So as we get towards your Thursday, look for that sunshine. Temperatures starting off only in the 40s. We'll see our high temperatures climbing into the low 70s in Park City with highs climbing close to 80 degrees in the Heber Valley. If we don't hit 80 on your Thursday, I think we'll do it on Friday in the Heber Valley with morning lows in the 40s and highs right around 80 degrees with that sunshine. Friday for Park City, we're looking at lots of sunshine. Temperatures starting off in the mid-40s, climbing into the low 70s. As we head into the weekend, a weak disturbance will bring a few extra clouds and a wind shift to the area. That may cool temperatures just a tad. So we're looking at temperatures dropping down into the mid-60s for highs again in Park City by Saturday, with highs still in the low 70s with partly cloudy skies for the Heber Valley. That sunshine sticks around for us, though, as we go back into your Sunday. So highs will be back in the upper 60s for Park City with highs in the mid-70s there for us in the Heber Valley. Heading into next week, we continue with the warm weather for your Memorial Day. Look for lots of sunshine right now is the way it's looking, with temperatures climbing into the low 70s for Park City and highs in the upper 70s near 80 degrees as you get into Heber Valley. So let's keep our fingers crossed we can keep our Memorial Day forecast dry. Right now it's looking good with lots of sunshine and those very warm temperatures. All right, that's a look at your forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the KPCW Local News Hour, I'll be talking with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybrown with a preview of this week's County Council meeting. Park City High School engineering teacher Brad Gannon will be joined by one of the PC CAP students to talk about building a roadworthy electric vehicle from the ground up. Then Recycle Utah General Manager Jim Bedell and Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer have the latest on a location for a new center and some upcoming events. Well, the committee that recommends millions of dollars in funding for local nonprofits each year says it's seen an increasing number of late applications. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's now recommending stricter penalties.
The Wrap Cultural Grant Committee gave out $1.7 million to 27 organizations May 14th, but it says an increasing number of nonprofits are filing late applications and financial reports, which is the follow-up paperwork to show how they used the money. According to Committee Chair Sharon Hansen, the current penalty for late financial reporting is a 10% deduction on the money the organization receives in the next grant cycle. She says the penalty should be stronger.
Further, our committee would respectfully request that if an organization that has already been funded is not turning in their financial reporting on time, that they should be disqualified from participating in the current grant allocation year. That grant applicant signs a contract with the county that states very clearly when their financial reporting is due, and for them not to be able to make that deadline doesn't seem acceptable to our committee.
When it comes to late applications, the penalty has always been disqualification. Summit County Manager Shane Scott says staff have made an exception here and there for certain circumstances. The council itself made an exception for the Sundance Institute when it missed last year's deadline. Here's Scott.
This is a very nuanced issue. We're not ready to speak about it. I think it would honestly be an inappropriate conversation to have it in open session.
Hansen thinks a lot of it comes down to organizations waiting until the hour of the deadline to submit.
As a committee, we feel very strongly that no late applications should be accepted. We felt it simply isn't fair to all the organizations who do follow the rules and get things in on time.
The council did not change the penalties for late grant reporting and applications May 14th. It only adopted the committee's 2025 recommendations for grant awards. That included funding for KPCW, of which Summit County is a financial supporter. Restaurant Tax Grant Committee Chair Billy DeMong told KPCW that his board, which allocates an even larger pool of money, has seen a marginal change in late applications. There are about twice the number of restaurant tax grant applications versus the cultural wrap tax grant. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow, starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, I just wanted to get an idea. You had told me that you did not attend the Wasatch Back Economic Summit. Any reason why not? Just lots of good information there.
Absolutely great. We also kind of did have some representation there. Unfortunately, I had some conflicts with some other commitments that I needed to make. And at previous summits, I was actually a speaker at some of those events. And so that wasn't the case this time.
So. Yeah. And I guess, have you heard, though, about the morning speaker, the keynote speaker there, where he talked about just what we're in for with regard to our workforce?
Yes. Yeah, I heard kind of some high-level points of that.
Yeah, and I guess as you kind of move forward, basically what he was saying is that a third of our workforce is immigrants. If immigrants are removed from, America, what do we do? And especially as we keep building more and more. I mean, who's gonna work?
Yeah, I mean, employment's a challenge for every employer right now. It's not as bad as it has been in the past, but something that we're constantly trying to evaluate and make sure that we're being as aggressive as we can to attract and retain quality employees.
All right. And I know that an e-bike ordinance is being worked on. Has that discussion been set for anytime soon?
Yeah, so the three largest entities in Wasatch County, that's Wasatch County, Heber City, and Midway City, have talked about trying to coordinate on those. Right now, Heber City and Midway City have adopted both e-bike regulations, but they're not yet in alignment. And so I think they're working on a version that would bring them into alignment so that it's consistent. And we have had a meeting at Wasatch County about kind of what issues, how we want to approach it. And I think the intent, again, is just to make sure that we are being consistent across jurisdictions as much as possible, also recognizing that in the county, enforcement is a lot more of a challenge. Just geographically, we have a much larger area and how that might affect some of the backcountry areas of the county. And we're just talking through those issues. And honestly, looking to Park City and Summit County as some examples of ways these things have been handled in the past.
Yeah, and we have heard about a number of e-motorcycles riding on those Coyote Ridge trails. Have you been able to stop that? Because I know it was kind of tearing them up. These are, again, dirt bikes as opposed to bicycles.
Yeah, we think an important aspect of this discussion is some public education. I think many people don't really consider the difference between an e-bike and an e-motorcycle, and that there are some potentially serious consequences for using those inappropriately or without them being properly registered, or drivers without licenses or things like that can bear a lot of weight. So that's one major aspect of what we're looking at, is how do we reach out and educate the public about the risks of using these e-bikes and what the existing state code is. You know, there are prohibitions against certain classes of bikes being operated by children under 16 or children 14 and under using bikes without parental supervision or things like that.
All right. So do you expect to see something approved, I guess, sometime before summer starts, or?
I think we do see more discussion on this. I don't know exactly when it will be. I wouldn't be surprised if at our next interlocal meeting, which is scheduled for July, we have further discussion on this. So probably not before the start of summer, but soon.
All right. Moving on to House Bill 356. This requires that a redistricting committee be established by June 1st. I don't see it on this week's agenda. Are you putting one together?
Wasatch County, we've been assured by the governor's office, the legislature, both houses of legislature, that the interim session that's forthcoming will not impact Wasatch County. So We don't really see the need in going through that exercise, largely because we don't expect to have to make any changes.
So when's that interim session happening? Before June 1st?
I don't know exactly. I know that they have talked about a number of dates of when they're scheduling it, and we're hoping to see it as soon as possible.
All right. I mean, but if it's not before June 1st, you're then in violation of state law.
Yeah, we're looking at evaluating kind of the best way to proceed, kind of given what we know right now.
So why do you get special treatment here? You being Wasatch County.
Yeah. I think the big difference is that Wasatch County already has 5 districts and 2 at large. And that's a form of government that many entities across the state have, and one that, for whatever reason, the state legislature is not concerned about as much as they say they're concerned about Summit counties. I know Summit, I think, gets unfairly targeted by the state legislature in a number of ways. I think this is just one of those. But I believe that the things that the legislature were doing were not intentionally trying to impact us. And so I think that unintentional impact is what we've been assured they're going to rectify.
So do you believe that because all of the representatives in Wasatch County are Republicans as opposed to Democrats as they are in Summit County?
You know, I'm sure politics is part of the equation for why things happen the way they do, but largely, you know, we're just trying to make sure that Wasatch County doesn't get disrupted, because we really feel that our voters being able to vote for 3 of our 7 council members is kind of the best compromise of the situation, and one that has resonated with the state legislators and leaders as well.
Okay, let's see. As you know, the Park City Council will be instituting paid parking at Bonanza Flats starting June 2nd. Wasatch County residents will have to pay for that parking unless they have a second home in Park City Municipals. Has that caused any issues with your constituents?
You know, I've not heard any issues raised just yet. I think there's an acknowledgement that Park City bonded to help pay for some of these properties, and so citizens up there do have an impact that's unique from over here. I think there overall is concern anytime there's, you know, access to what has been largely at least considered public land or other publicly accessible places that access is being changed in some way. So I do expect to hear some, but it's not been a major topic of discussion.
Now, have you heard from any Brighton Estate residents? I know some are concerned about this paid parking plan go into effect, basically because they're concerned that those who don't want to pay will find parking in the neighborhood. And speaking from experience, we saw that happen all over Park City when Park City Mountain started charging for parking. I mean, they're like rats, you know? They go and find what they can. So have you heard from Brighton Estate residents?
They've not reached out to us specifically on this issue, no.
Okay, and so will there be some kind of patrolling in the neighborhoods? Would that be done by you, or that would have to be done by Park City Municipal?
My understanding is most of those roads are private roads, and I think it's possible that, you know, if somebody parked on private property, they could be subject to being towed or other things like that. And I think we really would have to coordinate with the community up there to see what options are available.
All right. During the regular meeting, a discussion and consideration of a pilot program to address parking and safety issues surrounding the Y intersection there at Bonanza Flat. This is being proposed by the Park City Council to limit parking there by, what, fencing off areas where people have traditionally parked?
So this is an area that is you know, there's a little bit of a wider section. If anyone who's been up there, you'll know there's a turnoff into the girls' camp. The Y intersection heads into Salt Lake County, Wasatch County, and Summit County. It's currently signed with no parking signs. So the current situation is that no one can park there. And what the proposal, as far as I understand it, is to kind of put up some temporary barriers that would limit the space so that it looks less attractive as a parking space, while also potentially opening up some of those spots for parking as well.
Yeah, for ADA parking was my understanding, and maybe some large recreation vehicles, is that?
Yeah, and I think part of that is just because of access, that it being so close to the road and relatively wide, it may be a good situation for those types of vehicles.
Yeah, so is Wasatch County in favor of this pilot project?
I think the council has expressed some concern. You know, Wasatch County doesn't have any paid parking on any public roads in this area. And I think there are circumstances certainly where that does make sense, but it's just a new thing for us. So what I think we're hoping to hear from Park City is kind of some explanation of the cost versus benefits of this proposal. And I think we will probably have some robust discussion.
All right. Speaking of Brighton Estates, at the council's last meeting, there was a discussion of a proposed settlement of the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association's lawsuit against Wasatch County. This came about, as I recall, when Wasatch County had dissolved the special service district that had been created by property owners to put in fire protection infrastructure. So what's the latest? Will the county settle here?
Yeah, I think so. We've been optimistic. This has been a long, ongoing lawsuit, and I think for greater than 7 years, maybe 8 years. We are kind of in the final stages of this negotiation. We really wanted the council to authorize kind of the high-level understanding of where we are at, just so that when we did reach a final conclusion, we could fully execute it and put this issue to rest. Thus far, I haven't signed that final document yet, but we're still optimistic that it's proceeding in a positive direction.
Yeah, can you explain why Wasatch County wanted to do away with this special service district? I mean, here are a bunch of property owners getting together on their own, willing to make the multi-million dollar investment in fire protection, and then the county shuts them down. So, I mean, if a fire breaks out and there's no fire protection, is the county now liable in this?
So it's actually quite a complicated situation, which you may be able to tell due to the 7 or 8 years of litigation. This was actually a request by only some of the residents. Some of the residents actually wanted to keep it the way that it was. And there was a lawsuit between two groups of residents that was joined with the county's lawsuits between one of them. And ultimately the settlement agreement would do away with kind of these two groups, create just one HOA and kind of resolve the issues at hand. And really the county's action was to begin the process of looking at the feasibility of creating some water and wastewater infrastructure, but ultimately it was infeasible to do it in such a remote area and in a place like this. And so the county really never started. And I think it was really an interest from some of those residents to look into it, who were disappointed when it became not practical.
So does this settlement then give Wasatch County the immunity that it's going to need if in fact a fire breaks out and there's no fire protection?
The way that wildfire responses work is kind of regulated by the state, and Wasatch County participates in that. We do some proactive fire mitigation efforts to try and make sure that one qualifies for our match for the state's fire program, and two, it helps educate homeowners to try and prevent forest fires, because really that's what the main issue is any fire that starts anywhere is going to be a problem, and if we can educate people to make sure that they don't happen in the first place, that's what our priority is focused on.
Well, wildfire, I mean you can take all the precautions you want, but sometimes you just get unlucky, right?
That's true.
Yeah. You and Sheriff Rigby put out a request for a proposal for medical services at the jail. Not too interested about that, but what's the latest with the investigation into the sheriff's office? When will we hear about those investigations that are underway?
I'm optimistic that probably within the next several weeks we will conclude that. Our investigator, Judge McKelvey, actually had some health issues that he was dealing with last month that were pretty serious, but he's got all clear from his doctor. So there was a little bit of a pause on the investigation, which is why it's taking a little bit longer than maybe we initially expected.
Okay. There was also a discussion about Wasatch County creating a county historian position. Has that been done?
Yeah, so we actually discussed it, and we did, again, look at Summit County. Summit County has a similar position. The council expressed support and interest. We actually convened a subcommittee to kind of dive into the issue a little bit more. It's something that's not included in our budget for this year, but the general direction from the council was, hey, let's look at it as we start to develop our 2026 budget.
All right. Why is it something the council thought was important to add?
I think you know, Wasatch County has a rich, deep history, and one that we want to take proactive steps to preserving. I think we also view it as a little bit of putting our money where our mouth is. We feel like preserving our rural heritage and the character of our community, documentation is a big part of that, because it's inevitable that our community is, has, and will change. But I think that this gives us an opportunity to make, at least educate people who come here about what life was like here and what things are still here that are of historical significance.
Yeah, any plans for some kind of museum?
So, yes, we're working on a new administration building, and part of that is some public display space that we're intending on kind of focusing on this issue. And so the question's been, do we hire this person to help curate this space, but also have a broader community impact? There are a lot of local historical societies, and we're really hoping that maybe if the council decides to go this direction, a position like this would be able to help surface a lot of the great work that really already exists out there, and how we shine a spotlight on some of these amazing historical events and individuals who've lived and been a part of this community for a long time.
Yeah. So that new administration building, is that underway?
Yeah, actually, we are working with Heber City on annexing the proposed properties, and we have kind of fairly far along designs, and so what we're doing is hoping to get through that approval process with Heber City, get into permitting, and hoping to begin construction later this year.
Okay, and then what about the courthouse construction?
That's underway right now. It's actually a longer and more complicated project because it's a 24/7 facility right now, and so it's going over three phases. We're actually nearing the completion of the first of those three phases, and it should be completed, I believe, later next year, in the fall of next year.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, not today.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dustin.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Park City High School engineering students are building a roadworthy electric vehicle from the ground up. The high school recently received their own Switch Lab EV that students will build, test, and troubleshoot, and then drive. In the studio with details, I have engineering teacher Brad Gannon, along with one of the students in the PC CAPS engineering program, Jackson Carlson. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Brad, let's start with you, and maybe you can just give us a bit of background on this. I mean, how did you find out about building an electric vehicle?
Originally, the grant was actually written by Lindsay Huntsman, our current superintendent and former CTE director. And it was a grant funded by the Education Foundation and through Perkins funds across the state of Utah. There's about $1.4 billion nationally that gets funded for CTE, and it was a special project that we purchased the electric vehicle through from Switch Labs.
All right. So this started at the beginning of the semester back in January?
This actually started back in August, and we initially purchased the vehicle almost 2 years ago just because of back orders and supply chain issues. We finally received the vehicle in August in our new construction lab space.
Okay, and that's what I was wondering. Where is this being put together?
It is being put together in our construction lab, in our brand new CTE space. It's a beautiful space, and being built by five students this semester and last semester with our PC CAPS program.
Okay, so how close are you to finishing it?
That is an excellent question. I just got back from a training 2 weeks ago in Michigan with Switch Labs, and we're working on the high voltage aspect right now and just balancing our batteries. And then hopefully, I am estimating between 5 and 10 hours of work, as long as we don't have too much troubleshooting to go through with diagnosing things and controlling the vehicle.
Okay. So Jackson, what have you kind of gotten out of being part of this project?
I've gotten a lot. It's the most problem solving I've ever done in my life by far. Just everything that it's so much. Every part of this project, there's been so much learning and so much just discovering of just new stuff. I've learned a ton from their curriculum, and we've had a lot of help from kind of our client, Brad Nickel. He's an electrical engineer, and he's helped a ton with that. Just gave us like a really good lesson on just everything electricity related, just how to be safe, how everything works, and mainly just like the components of the car. It's a very like kind of bare bones, like we're not building, you know, a Ford EV or something like that. It's a very like component focused. It's a pretty like universal knowledge type of pathway or like kit that we're building. So I feel like I've just learned a lot just overall about electric cars.
Yeah. So since there's just five students, I mean, you're all working kind of on together as you move the process along. It's not like somebody took this and others took something else?
Yeah, it's mostly just it was two students in the semester before us, and then we picked up where they left off. And then my partners, Sean and Brian, we've just been kind of just day by day just tackling through. It's been quite the process.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because usually with these PC CAPS program, they're the students partner with either like a local business, but you mentioned this Brad Nickel. Is he the providing the oversight then of the program?
Yes, he's an electrical engineer in our community, and he's had students also that have gone through the PC CAPS program and the high school. And he just wanted to get more involved with our program and become a mentor to our students last semester and this semester. Especially talking about the electrical aspect of things, low voltage and high voltage, and dealing with safety issues that come up with dealing with lithium batteries and making sure we have no conductivity that would cause a reaction.
Yeah, so what comes in the kit? What did you guys get?
It starts with a basic frame. It's actually based off of Volkswagen Beetle. It's a 96-volt vehicle. There's 32 lithium batteries that go into it. And then everything from headlights to a chain to wheels to axles and everything is built by the students throughout the semester. And ideally, you can build the entire vehicle in about a two-week intensive program with about 80 hours with about 5 to 6 students. Across the nation, there's about 300 high schools and colleges that have the vehicles. They've been around for about 7 years in schools.
So the chain you mentioned, like a bicycle chain?
Yeah, kind of like a bicycle chain. Imagine it can be roadworthy, and the idea, it can actually be licensed as a motorcycle in the state of Utah if the district decided to go that route.
Okay, so that's the drivetrain.
That's the drivetrain.
Yeah.
Correct.
Interesting. And then what about brakes?
Yeah, there's brakes on it. We got a front and rear brake. And that was actually, I think Jackson can talk about that. It was one of the most challenging things to deal with the brake lines, leakage issues. And there's still some more parts that we can do to improve it after my training. Like, hey, buy this part. This will work better for that certain situation.
Yeah, so tell me about some of the challenges. You got to stop.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so where we kind of picked up where that first semester group left off, and they had just kind of mounted the brakes and gotten everything ready, and I think we probably spent a solid 2 weeks on just brake lines and brake fittings. We had to get different fittings and different master cylinders, just all sorts of stuff, and it's two separate, like, systems. There's two cylinders for the brakes, and it's one pedal will control the front and one pedal will control the rear. So you have to bleed both of them, and it was a way longer process than we thought it would be, and I feel like that's where we spent most of our time on the car at the start.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so how many pedals do you have down below?
You got three. You have the accelerator, then you have the rear brake, and then the front brake.
Okay, the front brake is what would have been a clutch?
Yeah.
Could be considered.
Okay.
Obviously, electric vehicle, we don't have a clutch.
Okay, so. Right. Interesting, though, that... wasn't just part of the steering wheel, but you had a steering wheel too.
Yeah, you can have, and that's one thing that's recommended from Switch Labs. They are interested in that, having control of the brakes on the steering wheel. It could potentially be the future part of it and something we can adjust. Like this, it's a kit, so we can adjust things as we see needed and add different parts or electronic components to it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the brakes. I mean, would you consider that the most challenging part of the project so far?
I don't know if it's been the most challenging part. I think it's been the most time-consuming. I would say the wiring has been the most challenging part. I mean, it's just hundreds of wires and just different relays, and it's a lot. And it's pretty simple, just putting the wires. It's pretty well marked. All the relays and everything is pretty well documented, but that's probably just a ton of work.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're learning. I mean, it's kind of under the title here of engineering, but you're learning what, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, I guess what other sorts of engineering?
And I would say it focuses back to like alternative engineering or alternative energies, like dealing with like what we have going on in the future. Are we using batteries? Are we using hydrogen? Are we using petroleum still? Like what does the future of alternative energies look like? And focusing on that within the engineering aspects.
Yeah, what have you liked most about the project?
It's just been a ton of fun. I have a ton of fun working on it. It's my favorite part of my day is going to fourth period PC CAPS with Mr. Gannett. It's been an insane amount of challenges and communication, but it's overall been fun. I've had a great time working on it. It's probably the most engaged I've ever been in anything in a classroom.
Yeah. So what happens to the vehicle once you're finished with it?
Our hope is to be able to finish it. We only realize we have like 3 weeks left of school. June 6th is their last day. And our presentations for our PCCAP students are next week. Our hope, my hope, and it's kind of up to the students if they want to finish it next week or the week after. Otherwise, we'll be finished in the fall or by myself and some other co-teachers this summer. But we can rebuild, we can take apart the vehicle and start from the ground up, take it down to the chassis, and then start fresh again in the fall.
And all the parts can be reused,
organized. The key is organization, which all of our students are fantastic at.
Yeah. So is it street legal?
It can be street legal, and it's up to the district whether or not we want to register the vehicle.
Okay. So what do you think, Jackson? Are you going to get it done in time? Probably got lots happening before end of school.
End of the school year.
Yeah.
I think we can do it. I think we can do it. The biggest chunk of work will be the high voltage, wiring all the batteries together and just being safe.
We have a procedure that we need to follow for a high voltage process, and I imagine it's going to take us about 4 to 6 hours just to get all the batteries wired up. And then we could do, once that's all wired up and connected, we can do the battery management system, connect all that, and then we can look in the programming and see if there's any wiring issues and diagnose anything that might be there. Because there is hundreds of wires, and if something's misaligned or not connected properly or not secure, we'll need to find that problem and diagnose it and fix it.
Okay, that CTE space is on the bottom level, I'm assuming.
We're on the first, my room is on the second floor, but the CTE space is on the first floor of the construction lab. It's a beautiful space. Everyone should check it out.
All right, so you can just pull up the door and
roll
it out?
Yeah, we have two garage doors. We can roll it out to the parking lot.
So. All right, well, I want to see this.
It's so cool. It will raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, if you get it done, I mean, what would you do? Just kind of roll it out into the back parking lot there?
Not being street legal yet. We cannot take it out on the street, but we can drive it on our campus, and we have a parking lot in the back there that we can hopefully have it running, hopefully in the next week or two.
Okay. You just got back from, a week-long training.
Yes.
How helpful was that in getting this
done? It
was
a whirlwind training. We were in from 8 to 5:30 every day, just outside of Detroit, with Switch Labs, and learned a ton, especially about electrical vehicle safety and just how to go through that whole build process with six others in a week. And there was a lot of diagnosing. We had troubles with lights. We had some electrical applications there. We blew out our front lights on the vehicle, and we didn't have time to diagnose it, so we had a workaround. Didn't have front lights, but the vehicle worked really well.
So it sounds like they put you in some scenarios that your students
will find out here very soon.
Oh, good. So you've got the answers now. You hope.
I wish.
Okay. And then for you, Jackson, I mean, is this, obviously, you like the engineering, the math, all of that. Is that something you plan to study going further, or?
We'll have to see. I don't know. This has definitely been like a pretty eye-opening project for different career paths and just different interests that I have, just kind of bolstering like what I know I already like to do. And this has just been a fun project. We'll see.
All right. Okay. We're going to look forward to it. You guys let me know when it happens, okay?
We'll let you know.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
That we just appreciate the community. Electric vehicles have been a lot of fun for our students this semester. And thank you.
Okay, that's Park City High School engineering teacher Brad Gannon along with student Jackson Carlson. Well, a date has been set for the end of the Park City Recycling Center. In the studio with details is Recycle Utah General Manager Jim Bedell along with Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning,
Leslie.
So, Jim, that date's been set to move out.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't mean the end of Recycle Utah the way you said that. But, yes, we've known for decades, you know, from the moment that Recycle Utah moved into the old bus shed owned by Park City Municipal Corporation, that eventually we'd need to leave. The city would need to repurpose that land, and that time has finally come. So as of June 30th next year, not this year, next year, we will no longer be operating our recycling facility there.
Yeah, well, I did mean the end of the center. I'm sorry if I didn't say center. I certainly has it right in front of me. So why this date?
Good question. I don't know the answer. Probably a better question for the city. I believe, and I guess I am being quoted on this, it has something to do with the engine house housing development and a need for a road there, but I could be mistaken.
All right. Now, Recycle Utah, even if it started building today, wouldn't have a new center. So what is the plan for recycling come July 1, 2026?
Well, that's a good question. And we are somewhat frustrated because at this point there is no answer. There have been some discussions between ourselves, Summit County staff, and Park City staff about an interim plan to figure out how collectively we can continue to collect the 3.5 million pounds of material that Recycle Utah currently handles. There has been no decision on that. You know, more concerning, there's been no decision yet on the longer-term plan. You've heard us speak before, and community members have in other forums, about what we truly need as a community, which is investment in diversion infrastructure to allow us to keep a lot more material out of the landfill. That's the bigger question, is what do we want to do in the long run?
Yeah, and again, we've been talking about this for years, long before for your days. And I guess, I mean, do you feel like the city and county have other thoughts about how to deal with recycling rather than building this multi-million dollar diversion center?
I don't know. I mean, at the city council meeting last Thursday, which I listened in, the mayor alluded to a report coming from staff, city staff, imminently about dealing with that. Perhaps some of the city's issues or suggestions will be expressed in that. You know, what we've promoted, and so far it seems to be well received by city and county officials, is the plan that RRS, our consultants, recommended, which is modeled on what our other peer Mountain Town communities have done. You know, communities with similar issues to ours in terms of second homeowners, tourists, and that's the investment we think is necessary. So far, no one's told us they think that's a bad idea, but nor has anybody stepped forward to say, great idea, and let's start executing it.
And we'll pay for it.
Well, that's a bigger issue, is paying for it. You know, there has been a suggestion that somehow, a misunderstanding, I would say, among certain officials, that Recycle Utah, as our local nonprofit, somehow has the resources to be building a multi-million dollar municipal diversion infrastructure. And I think we've finally succeeded in convincing most, if not all, of the appropriate officials that that's just not true. That if there's an investment to be made here, it's to be made by primarily our governments, perhaps with the involvement of some other civic organizations that have better resources.
Yeah, again, I mean, it was, we couldn't get anywhere. I mean, I'm talking years ago, when it was finally with the city, you couldn't get anywhere. And so it was, I can remember Summit County Manager Tom Fisher kind of standing up and saying, I'll take care of it, but then he left. I mean, did everything just drop?
Yeah, I'm not the person to answer that because that was before my time here. You know, what I will say is there's a lot of history here and a lot of good history. I mean, this community's done a lot of great things, and Recycle Utah's done a lot of great things. But, you know, now we have a trigger point. You know, we're closing next year. And the reality is we will either, as a community, take the appropriate steps to build the infrastructure to replace and enhance what we're doing or not.
Right. So you're out of... It closes June 30th, and then you have, what, a couple of months just to get yourselves out of there?
Yeah, we were asked to be out of that space by September 1st. And, you know, given the time it'll take us to process the remaining materials we've collected, clean up the site, move our machinery out, we decided we need 2 months for that. So that's why we've established the June 30th date.
So what's your interim plan then? I mean, where are you going to put that equipment?
We don't have the ability to act on that. You know, we don't have the financial resources for it. We've talked with the city and the county staff about, frankly, we've had a lot of brainstorming about interim steps and places we might be able to just put a baler and a styrofoam compact or a styrofoam densifier in the interim. We haven't come up with any space yet. I'm hopeful that we will. But at this point, there is no answer, and that's frustrating.
Yeah, because you certainly, I mean, even if you don't have the storage for the equipment, I guess you can always rent a storage shed. But what about just Recycle Utah administrative offices?
Yeah, I think, we will, and I'm sorry for picking on your words earlier. I didn't mean to do that. You spoke very well. But the idea of the end of recycling sort of triggered something. I mean, this organization has been around for 30-some-odd years. It's very community-focused. It will continue to exist. Worst case, if we're no longer involved in physical diversion and handling materials, we'll have office space. We'll continue to have Chelsea and Mary and others working on education. Perhaps we can devote even more resources to our outreach and maybe special events. So we're not going anywhere, but we are very concerned that the community could be taking a huge step backwards in a situation where we're not particularly good to begin with in sustainability.
Hmm. And like you say, I mean, you've got a couple of staff members that have a future, but you also have many other staff members that, I mean, do they, you know, pull anchor and move on?
I hope not. I mean, it's, I don't want to talk about human resource issues in public, but we've been pretty open and honest with our staff about what the situation is. We have, you know, phenomenal operations staff. All of them are in great demand. You know, sustainability and waste management in general are growing fields. But I think they like our organization. I think on a personal level, they would prefer to be helping us, you know, operate an even larger facility to get our diversion rate up to where it belongs.
So the only thing that is certain at this point is that we don't have a recycling center as of July 1, 2026.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I guess it just, are you continuing to meet?
Nothing scheduled. You know, there has been increased discussion, especially among some of the elected officials at the city and the county level. I think at the, county council meeting, I'm sorry, the city council meeting last Thursday, that there was some discussion about a possible capital investment. So we were encouraged by that. But to answer your question specifically, there's nothing on our calendar in terms of meeting with officials going forward.
Okay. Well, so stay tuned. Hopefully we know more next month. Chelsea, let's turn to you. We've got a number of upcoming events. Let's start with Dumpster Days. That's happening soon.
Yeah, so we have Dumpster Days coming up at the end of the month. It is May 29th through 31st, and it's going to be from 9 to 4. We'll have two dumpsters where they always are, by the Boneyard parking lot by the entrance of Recycle Utah, and we'll be accepting yard waste and household waste for Summit County residents.
Okay, what do you not accept? Because I know there's a few rules there.
Yeah, so we don't accept hazardous waste. We don't accept things like fridges, mattresses, but anything like a couch or something bigger than can fit in your curbside trash bin that you don't want to haul to the landfill, you can bring to Dumpster Days.
Okay, and are you going to be doing those at the end of every month this summer like you did last year, or is it just this is a one-time deal?
Yeah, there'll be, there's traditionally one in the spring and one in the fall. And at this point, we do plan to have the fall event.
Okay, because it seemed like we had it more often last year, no?
No.
Maybe not. Okay, well, that's good. A couple times, so later this fall, if you miss this week or weekend after next. You're also doing landfill tours. Tell me about these.
Yeah, so that's actually happening in an hour and 8 minutes, if anyone has nothing going on and wants to go to the landfill. We have our facility tour series happening this spring, and we'll have more in the fall. But today we have our landfill tour at 10 a.m. And then on June 12th, we're going to take another tour of the Three Kings Water Treatment Facility in Thames Canyon neighborhood. We did one of those in the fall, and it was awesome. That facility is really cool to tour. And that's from 9:30 to 11. And then we are also having a tour of Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District on June 25th from 10 to 11:15. And all of these tours are free. It's just so people can get familiar with how their water and waste is treated in our county. And you can register for those on Eventbrite on our website.
Okay. So when people get out to the landfill, What is it that you think they get out of that?
Tim does a great job giving the tour of the landfill. I have been on it a few times now, and I've learned something new every time. He shows us what they actually do collect to recycle at the landfill. So they have cardboard. They accept a lot of hazardous waste at the landfill, and I think a lot of people don't know that. They hold on to it until we have our hazmat days. And then also he just talks about the issues with diversion, why we have so much waste going into the landfill, what that waste breakdown is. So it's a really comprehensive tour of the landfill. And we'll definitely have another one of those in the fall, probably, in case people are not free in an hour from now.
Yeah. And so what is that? I mean, do you kind of get around to like the open cell and just have a look at the refrigerators and the mattresses and the TVs in there?
Yeah. So a lot of the time it's just at the entrance of the landfill, which is where they collect past, like right before the tipping floor of the landfill, or the scale of the landfill, and that's where a lot of the material is collected that people can just bring in. I have been to one of the cells on one tour, but I think during normal operating hours they try and keep people out of there.
All right. And you also have green drinks coming up. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have our next green drinks on July 8th, and that's going to be at Sage Sanctuary. So it's an animal sanctuary in Browns Canyon. And the focus of that's going to be on water. We have some really great speakers lined up. And registration now for green drinks is $10, just to help us cover the cost of the events. But that's going to be a really fun one. And then we have another really great one coming up in September on food with Summit Community Gardens. And our final one in November is going to be on waste, and that's going to be at Park City Mountain. So we have a good lineup for green drinks, and registration for those is always on our website.
RecycleUtah.org.
RecycleUtah.org.
Okay. Jim, Chelsea, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just wanted to put out there to save the date for our 10th annual 100-mile meal. It's going to be at Mid-Mountain Lodge this year because of the construction with the Sunrise Gondola. But we're really excited. We have already started planning with the Park City Mountain staff and started talking to our farmers. So that's going to be on August 16th. And it's going to be a really good one.
Yeah. So you'll be providing then shuttles up to the launch?
Yeah. So we're starting to plan logistics. We'll have shuttles from the first time lot up to Mid-Mountain Lodge. Yep. It's going to be a great event.
Okay. Chelsea, Jim, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Well, the Utah Court of Appeals has denied a Vail Resorts request for a new trial in the bowling alley injury lawsuit involving a Park City Mountain employee. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
In 2022, a third district court jury awarded a former employee of Jupiter Bowl over $2 million for medical expenses and damages relating to an incident at a work party at the now-closed bowling alley in Kimball Junction. Amy Herzog was retrieving a stuck bowling ball from a gutter when Park City Mountain employee Joe Ellis threw a ball while doing a 360-degree spin in the lane next to where Herzog was working. The ball flew over the divider between the lanes and slammed into Herzog's left hand, crushing it. The injury required three surgeries, and her lawyers say she will never regain full use of it. The jury found that both Ellis and Vail were at fault, siding with Herzog's attorneys, who argued the event was company-approved and paid for with Park City Mountain's credit card. The $2 million award was more than double what Herzog's lawyers requested from the jury. Vail later appealed the case, challenging several rulings from the district court, including the denial of the company's request for a new trial over what it called excessive damages. In an opinion issued Friday, the appeals court said the district court correctly decided there was sufficient basis for the jury's award and ordered the district court to reinstate the original $2 million judgment. It wasn't immediately clear Monday whether Vail Resorts would appeal the case to the Utah Supreme Court. KPCW has reached out to the company for comment. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And two major road projects will impact the regular flow of traffic in Thanes Canyon and Bonanza Park this summer. Work is already underway on the first phase of the Thanes Canyon Pathway Project to make biking and walking improvements in the Thanes Canyon Three Kings area. Park City engineer John Robertson says the first phase includes a path on the south side of Thanes Canyon Drive along the municipal golf course's driving range between Three Kings Drive to State Route 224, then crosses the highway to Snow Creek Drive, which connects with the McLeod Trailhead. Robertson says this will eliminate all overflow parking at the golf course.
It does remove that parking that has been not really a formal parking area, correct, because it was just dirt and our parking areas should be paved. So that will be no longer accessible by folks.
While the first phase may appear like a sidewalk to nowhere, Robertson says when both phases are complete, there will be a 12-foot sidewalk from the golf course to Park City Mountain Resort along Three Kings Drive. Currently, it's only one-way traffic on Thanes Canyon Drive. Construction on Phase 2 starts next spring and is expected to end by the fall of 2026. And next week, renovations begun on Homestake Road between Kearns Boulevard and Park Avenue. This new road will feature a 12-foot multi-use pathway, a 6-foot sidewalk, and parking improvements. The new engine house development is expected to increase use of Homestake Road. Robertson says the road will be closed to all through traffic this summer. Accommodations are being made for residents living along Homestake Road. The project will be finished this fall before tenants move into the new engine house development.